U.S., back in the U.S.S.R. Well, the dirty brave girls really knocked me out.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Nina Kusheva, who is a professor in the Graduate Program of International Affairs at the New School and a senior fellow at the World Policy Institute. She's also an editor of and a contributor to Project Syndicate and is a member of the Council on Foreign Relations and the author of Imagining Nabokov, Russia Between Art and Politics. She's currently working on a book, The Lost Khrushchev, A Family Journey into the Gulag of the Russian Mind. Welcome to Background Briefing, Nina Kusheva.
Thank you.
And I guess the breaking news out of Russia now is a little bit in the tabloid sphere, I should say, where after attending a ballet performance, both Russian President Vladimir Putin and his wife Lyudmila went on state television and said that they've divorced. They made a joint decision. We hardly see each other. Each of us has our own life, says Mr. Putin. And she added that the divorce was civilized. So what do you make of that a strange kind of expiating of their private life in public?
It is. I mean, because in Russia, private life of leaders is such a secret, then when this kind of information comes out, you really have to go to People's Magazine or whatever the tabloids are all over. I also find it very interesting that they announced it after the Bolshoi performance, which is also incredibly Russian and incredibly trite, very cliche. You go to the theater and then some big events happen. I think the timing is very interesting because she is hardly seen in Russia. We don't know where she lives. There are rumors that she lives in Germany, but we don't even know that because I think she appears in public with him every 2 years or something. So I think the timing of their announcement is interesting because it doesn't seem that they've been together for quite some time. At least, in fact, there was a rumor in 2008, not a rumor, it was in an article published that he has a fling and he has a girlfriend in whom he either already has married or is going to marry, Alina Kabaeva, the gymnast. So this is not news per se. I think the most interesting thing is the timing of it. Why all of a sudden this has come out? I mean, Putin just won or just got himself elected for a long term of 6 years. Why does he need to be a divorced leader? And I think that's where the speculation begins, because it's either he wants to take attention from other issues like Syria, Russian human rights, because that's what we're going to be discussing now, is not only that he's divorcing, but who is his new fling, or is he really marrying that old fling that he had, that gymnast? Did he decide to play democracy and he wants to soften his image as a democratic leader using this very important democratic institution, as the institution of the First Lady, that has never been used in Russia almost, except for Gorbachev a little bit? So does he want to soften his image and not appear as such an autocrat or single kind of leader as he has been? And or we're just very jealous of the French, because Russians are always very jealous of the French, and she just wants to do what Sarkozy did, divorced and got remarried.
Well, then does that mean that perhaps coinciding with the Winter Olympics, he'll be sporting this gold medal-winning Russian gymnast on his arm, or perhaps we will have on state TV a state wedding?
Exactly. That would be my next thing. I mean, it's also for the Sochi Olympics. Maybe he just wants to have a really grandiose opening of that strange area in summer area in Russia that is going to be a winter season Olympics, and he's going to have a grandiose wedding. I mean, it could be that simple. It could be that trite. Or all of the above that I said. I mean, I think that is all of these things could be taken into consideration. So now we are discussing that instead of Assad and him selling Russian arms to Syria.
So Nina Kusheva, again, professor at the Graduate Program of International Affairs at the New School and a senior fellow at the World Policy Institute and also a member of the Council on Foreign Relations and the author of the forthcoming book, The Losh Khrushchev, A Family Journey into the Gulag of the Russian Mind. We just talked about Sochi, the upcoming Winter Olympics, which, of course, are perilously close to the Northern Caucasus, where there have been so many problems, both in terms of an ongoing guerrilla war and, of course, the two, the Chechen brothers that were involved in the bombing of Boston have brought that to our attention. But there's been some recent stories coming out of Moscow that this building for Sochi, for the Olympics, $30 billion has gone missing. Is that possible?
Oh, in Russia, please. Of course. Everything is possible. Yes. And there have been corruption stories all along. It's just now the West started paying attention because it's closer to the event. Look, this is the place where the snow needs to get imported. And Russia is having Winter Olympics. I mean, you know, when you import the snow, here and there, billions will go. So that is entirely possible, but Russia is very good at that. I mean, it's a disaster. I wasn't there, but a very close person to me did go and said it's just really an amazing construction site that doesn't go anywhere. It's sort of this endless, never-ending story. But Russians are great at that, creating that kind of Potemkin village, mm-hmm. which is going to be Sochi. I mean, they are, in the last 5 minutes, they're going to make it work for 5 seconds. And, of course, when everybody, I mean, hopefully there would be no more, horrible tragedy, something would fall on somebody's head. But when everybody is gone, that's when it starts falling out and falling apart. But Russia is used to it. I mean, that's how we function, basically. It's always this kind of avral, you know, the last minute thing you created for 5 minutes and then it falls apart immediately. I think with the Northern Caucasus, it's a very important concern, but once again, Russians are very good at this kind of staging this one moment forceful thing, and probably all policemen in the universe, all Russian policemen will be in Sochi guarding guests and Russians against terrorism. I think what is interesting, not so much the Olympics there, because I'm sure it's going to be a lot of brouhaha, but what's happening after that? What will happen after that? How quickly all these things are going to start falling apart? Because that's sort of my very careful prediction, is that's when Putin will start losing ground, because a lot of effort went into Sochi, and you cannot sustain that artificial creation for long. And that's when his popularity is going to go down and down and down.
Well, it seems from other stories that I'm hearing, Nina Khrushcheva, from Russia, that amongst the elite, there's a great deal of dissatisfaction, if not contempt, for Putin, who kind of regulates the oligarchs, and his KGB cronies seem to be forcing their way onto the boards of all of the big state industries. And there are rumors that Putin himself may end up being one of the richest people on the planet. But there was this respected economic advisor to Russia's prime minister, Dmitry Medvedev, Sergei Guriev, who basically jumped ship and got out of town, right?
Well, I mean, and once again, we can talk about it as if it's a unique story, or we can talk about it as one of the many stories that we have. Garry Kasparov also jumped ship and left. So that has been, no, it's, Putin is going down. We talked about it in this program numerous times. It just takes a long time for him to go. And there's still, we should not forget that there's still over 50% of the population, if not more, that still supports him, because in the Russian provinces, he's a strong man. He's a man that Russians are accustomed to. But, you know, the less democratic he is, or the less democratically he appears, the better it is for those Russians who think that Russia only could be ruled by a strong man, by the Tsar. Once again, we can speculate about his wealth, and there have been reports and studies done, and apparently his current wealth is over $70 billion. so I don't know what it is on Forbes magazine list, but probably somewhere high up there. So yes, it is. He's in a very shaky position, and that's exactly what you just confirmed. I mean, people are leaving, and that's what I give him. I give him time to Sochi, because now they really put a lot of effort. In fact, I'm sure you followed the story a couple of weeks ago. He announced to the Russian oligarchs that they're the one that's footing the bill for Sochi. Usually it's a state affair, but now it's the oligarchs, and he's sort of making them donate them those pavilions that they're going to build to the state, and, you know, they cannot refuse. So I think that's what I kind of keep coming back to, is that what would be really interesting to see is how quickly all this will start unraveling after Sochi.
So, Nina Kosheva, the idea that the narod, the people out in the provinces support the strong man, but the fact that the strong man's getting a divorce, is that going to influence the opinions of the narod?
Yes, I think so, to a degree. But at the same time, you know, it depends on who he's going to come up with. So they're so used to a leader being a single leader. I mean, all, you know, if you look at Stalin, if you look at Brezhnev, all sort of autocratic-type leaders, they've always been alone, not sharing power. And, you know, when you have a somewhat democratically inclined leader like Nikita Khrushchev, they would be the vice president. Mikhail Gorbachev, they would be the vice president. So Narod is used to a leader being alone. So it is, I don't know if they're going to hold it against him, but I actually think that if there's somebody worth interest, somebody beautiful, somebody, you know, something, Carla Bruni type, probably Narod would like that. Narod would want to see their Putin, their beloved Putin. I mean, he's not as beloved as he was, but he's beloved by some still. So their Putin being taken care of, and there is this woman, whoever that woman might be, is next to him, and he's taken care of, and, you know, our leader is well. And so that can actually play to his into his favor.
So in other words, this will be, you know, he flew with the cranes, he cuddled the tiger that he's supposed to be rescuing, except it came from the Moscow Zoo.
Right. Well, yeah,
and now he's going to be, you know, dancing at the ball in Sochi with the gold medal Olympian.
With the new wife. And actually, it's interesting because that woman he was reported on being together in 2008, Alina Kabaeva, she was in a tiger outfit, so probably his interest in women and tigers emerging together.
I see. So there's just a couple of others, a couple more subjects I wanted to bring up in the last couple of minutes here, Nina Kosheva. The anti-Putin protesters, 10 of the 12 Russians being tried over these rallies against Putin, their sentences have just been extended by 6 months. So I take it that Putin's control of the judiciary is working in the sense that he's trying to intimidate the protesters into just simply giving up. Is it working?
Well, it is working and it is not working, because we know, you know, from the Stalin show trials, we know that the judiciary has never been independent in Russia, and now it's sort of the new show trial story all over again. So it is working in a sense that the state still controls it, but if we follow the Navalny trial, Alexei Navalny, this anti-corruption lawyer who was now accused of all sorts of horrible things, stealing timber from a provincial timber company and whatnot, they're speaking out. Nobody's accepting their guilt. Nobody is confessing. Mikhail Khodorkovsky of Yukosoil, former Yukosoil, is speaking from his gulag where he is at on the northern side of Russia. So it's not 100%, but it's such a Potemkin village. It's such a sham. Nobody believes the system. The legal system may not be working, but nobody thinks that it's actually fair despite all Putin's efforts, because he has been speaking out himself, saying, well, all our trials have to be objective, and he's not fooling anybody. And so actually that also would contribute to this kind of post-Sochi collapse, because after a while, you know, when you walk in parallel lanes, as the people and the Kremlin now walk, eventually you separate so much that it would be irrelevant anymore how close or far away your enemy is. So you basically function as if your enemy is not around. So the people are going to go and protest even more. So it's, no, I mean, people lost, I think since 2010, probably 2012, people lost, not enthusiasm, but a bit of a vigor of protest, but it didn't go away. I mean, I was just in Moscow when I was in April, and there were huge protests to which I went.
Well, I guess you have to add to that list, too. One of the Pussy Riot women is on a hunger strike, right? That's getting publicity, too, in spite of the press control that Putin has.
Absolutely. And she wasn't allowed to come to her own appeal, and that was also a very big story, after which she announced the hunger strike. So it's, you know, it's a process.
Sure.
It really is a process.
A drip, drip, drip. Well, I thank you very much for joining us, Nina.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Again, I've been speaking with Nina Kruscheva, who's a professor in the Graduate Program of International Affairs at the New School and a senior fellow at the World Policy Institute. She's also editor of and contributor to Project Syndicate and is a member of the Council on Foreign Relations and the author of Imagining Nabokov, Russia Between Art and Politics. She's currently working on a book, The Lost Khrushchev, A Family Journey into the Gulag of the Mind. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon and assistant producer Nick Garino. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Took the kids to the park and disappeared.